Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, it's a themed emergency we're playing, Chris, because is there really a theme to Chicago Fire?
There is not. We complain about that all the time.
Yeah.
There's basically a tone. That's all it is.
But TV themes used to be like, that was the stuff when you were watching a TV show. You could sing them. You could sing along with them.
Absolutely.
Like in the 70s and 80s.
Sometimes they would go on for like 2 minutes. You know what I remember?
With a story.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's a few of them, but the one that pops into my head now is H.R. Puff and Stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Boy, that told the whole story every time.
This is going to be really weird, but I'm going to bring that up later for a certain reason, because it turns 50 this year.
Puffin Stuff does?
Puffin Stuff turns
50. Come on,
yeah,
dude.
We're old.
Come on.
We're old.
Wait
we're
a minute,
old.
Though. That was a really random pull on my part.
It was. It was. Very weird. I swear to God. Chicago's own Christian Stolte plays Mouch on the hit NBC drama Chicago Fire. The season finale airs Wednesday, May 22nd at 8 Central, and Chris is live in the studio. What's going on, buddy?
I am just enjoying hiatus, so I am definitely, I want to talk to you about the season finale.
Are you having that operated on?
No, it's just a medication thing at this point.
Okay.
We're going to see where it goes from there. I want to talk about the finale, but it's kind of you're going to have to jog my memory a little bit. It's a show about fire.
Yes, it's firefighters. Yes. 7 seasons in, 159 episodes, all in which you've been a part of. That's pretty cool, man.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy, and it's one of those things where, in my mind, it's just all one long thing.
Yeah.
So when people say your favorite episode or the episode where, you know, it's not like we wrap an episode and go have a party and then, you know,
all sit and watch it together.
Recharge our batteries and then start the next episode.
Do you watch it after it? Like, do you watch the completed episode?
No. I mean, I see it when you see it. Or,
okay.
You know,
yeah.
There really just isn't time for
I wouldn't think so.
In fact, we used to do a table read for each episode where we would all, you know, exactly as you know those
very traditional
are. We would all gather, we'd take, and maybe we're in the middle of shooting episode 14 for the season, and then we're going to go do a table read for episode 15 on our lunch break at episode 14,
right? And, a lot of sync.
And also kind of a nuisance to make time for that. Some people were fans of it, but for me it was just another drag on the schedule.
James Garner said he never watched The Rockford Files.
What?
And he's that big. So, I mean, you're following in his footsteps. I don't know, the big network drama. And you just don't get time to do it, I guess.
We were at I think some people say that, and I don't know that I believe
it.
We were at the premiere for Public Enemies, and Johnny Depp was wandering in the lobby sort of restlessly as everyone was filing in. And I said, are you coming in? He goes, I haven't watched anything I've done since. And I forget what it was he named, but it was like 20 years earlier or something like that. Just never sees it. I guess I wonder, how do you know if
you're doing a decent job?
Yeah. How do you know if what you intended to put on the screen is what ended up on the screen?
But like with your entourage, they probably tell you every day how great you are.
I can't trust them anymore. They're just a bunch of yes men and women. And women.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. Did I say yes, men? Yes,
okay. So, you know, when I talk about what happens in the finale episode, I had to sort of shoot a text to Derek Haas, the series creator, and say, hey, what the hell happens in the series finale?
Yeah.
I kind of forget.
Yeah.
And
you can't divulge too much either.
Because they're
crazy cliffhangers. They're crazy cliffhangers, usually.
They are cliffhangers.
It's like a who shot JR kind of always.
Yeah. Well, yeah. In fact, because of the nature of the show that we do, it's hard to come up with a different. I mean, everybody's trapped in a building and it's looking bad.
Yeah.
Variations on that come up.
Well, there's an investigation going on, I think, in the last episode.
There is an investigation, and that is one of the things that they are going to. That will come to a crescendo in this episode. I won't say it'll be resolved, but there will be a very big and unexpected reveal. It's me. I'm the arsonist.
I can't believe that. We almost lost you once before. I can't imagine now all of a sudden. No,
well, in last night's episode, I was almost taken out by exploding cans of hairspray. And then the local affiliate, NBC, decided that they wanted to interrupt our show for 25 minutes on tornado fundamentals.
Oh, no.
So, I ended up just tuning out because I thought this isn't going anywhere. Yeah. We're missing too much here.
But you can catch it on NBC.com and on Hulu in case you miss any of that stuff.
Thanks for throwing that out there. absolutely can.
So where are we at, kind of, sort of?
In terms of the story-wise?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is a sort of B storyline that's kind of comical where Daniel Kyrie, who plays Ritter, our candidate, I just love watching this guy work. And his character is unlike anyone we've had before. He's kind of, there's a sensitivity to him that is somewhat out of place at the firehouse. And by sensitivity, I just mean he cares about other people in an open and undisguised way.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of ribbing. There's a lot of sort of friendly banter, insulting going on. That's just part of the daily exchange. It's, you know, and it's our watered down version of how real firefighters talk to
each
other.
Okay.
But I think someone picked up on it's weird. It would be weird to have Ritter participate in that. So there's a little thing that's triggered by a small incident. And Herman notices this exchange between Ritter and Cap. And says, you had an opportunity to insult him, and you let it slide. You cannot do that. So we start trying to coach Ritter.
How to insult him.
How to just insult people.
Bust
some balls in general. Yeah. And that is one of the expressions that I think they do let us use on network television.
Yeah.
So it's a little ball-busting seminar.
Yeah.
And Ritter decides to try to, test his wings in this area, and he picks the wrong person and the wrong time.
But I think that's what makes this show so much fun, though. I mean, there's obviously a very serious nature to the show and a lot of ripped from the headlines kind of stories, but there's always some good fun that is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
I assume on the set and off, too.
The problem is there's a bit of a struggle where there are some of us who want more comedy on the show without turning it into a comedy. And I think the thing is there, it's within the characters and not, if it's characters realistically in this environment, sort of taking chops at each other and having a laugh in that sense, it's fine. But there's a vibe of a situation comedy that they try to steer away from because it's not what the show is.
Not what it is.
So there's a little bit of a struggle there.
Yeah.
We talk to the writers who always seem to be trying to get funny things on there, and that sometimes there's resistance to it.
But police shows, fire shows, there's always a little air of comedy in there. Even when I remember watching Rescue Me with Dennis Leary, he was a comedian. It was drama. It was deep, but it was funny.
Yeah.
You had to do a little of that.
Yeah, some of the biggest laughs come out of those kind of high pressure and environments.
Yeah.
So, that is part of it. And I do appreciate the comedic storylines. I didn't get to finish watching last night's episode, but there was the whole thing about the missing piercing nozzle and that somehow we were accused of stealing it and we were very indignant about it and then found out we actually had it after all. So how are we going to sneak this thing back to the other firehouse?
Those are the stories I like.
I enjoy those. But I understand why those are the B storylines because that's not edge of your seat stuff. That's just nice relief from the high stakes drama.
That's a very good point. And I saw your buddy this season, David Pasquese.
Oh, yeah.
In a couple episodes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know he's been kind of in and out of the episodes over time. That
must
be kind of cool.
Oh, I'm always fighting for more.
Yeah.
More Pasquese. And, of course, we had...
no spoiler alert. Veep, he's dead.
Yeah. Well...
Maybe not.
I immediately I immediately sent a message to him. You were not on that boat. Tell me you weren't on that boat.
Yeah.
Not that it matters with the show over.
You're right. It's the last episode coming up.
But yeah, we had not only Dave, we had TJ Jagodowski, his longtime improv partner on the same episode. And I it's hard for me to tell from where I sit how much the writers are tuned into. I know that Derek knows that those two are improv legends. And I think he just sort of thought this might be fun, And it was fun. It definitely was. And they did a lot of sort of unexpected things with the dialogue they were given. But obviously, there's the temptation to say, can you just let these guys riff for 5 minutes? Can you just...
a little improv, a little something.
Write a scene that has basic guidelines in it and let them, you know, conjure it up.
Because they got to know you by now. You know, I mean, obviously, right?
Yeah. No, but it's great. It was that was one of my favorites, actually, having them on. That's right up there with when we had Rush, the band Rush, on the show. TJ and Dave in the same episode. That's a bit of a badge of honor
that
for
is
our
cool.
show.
That is cool. You were, I mean, you've been on the show a long time, and I remember talking to you, I think maybe it was the second season, and at one point in your life, you actually thought about becoming a first responder. I mean, your theater work precedes you, but you were thinking about that. Your dad was
a DEA agent. Yeah, he was a cop, St. Louis City cop, and for 20-something years, and then a DEA agent for 20-something years. I think that was a more present thing in my life, and I definitely, I'll say this just to be honest about it, I had my name on the list for the next police academy class. But it was really more, I wasn't terribly driven to it. It was a thing I was secondhand familiar with.
Right.
And I had kind of felt like I was running out of options.
Gotcha.
I was at an age where I thought, you kind of got to do something that's at least an identifiable thing.
That you go home and tell your dad, this is what I'm doing.
Well, he was very happy to hear that.
Yeah, of course.
It was only sometime after that I said, yeah, you know what, I'll change my mind. That's when it became a little bit of a riff.
And of course.
I went on to play 600 different cops.
I hear this a million times. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. When you were a kid, we were talking a little bit about Emergency in the 1970s. When you were a kid growing up in the late 60s, early 70s, what kind of shows were you watching on TV growing up? Was it cop shows? Was it westerns? Was it comedy? What was favorites?
This is the thing. In some way, I feel like, hey, man, we watched whatever the hell was on. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. Oh,
there was not just this vast Cheesecake Factory menu to choose from.
No, we are never again going to talk about one single show. Nope. Maybe there's a one Game of Thrones or something like that that's a little bit above the rest, but not like it was.
It's hard to even imagine that.
Yeah.
Because even Game of Thrones, that's among the people with access to HBO.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's not as widespread as the last episode of MASH or the last episode of Seinfeld. It just can't be anymore. You're right. But, you go back, I watched, I'm trying to think of things that I watched.
H.R. Puff and stuff.
Here's one of my earliest memories of watching TV is, of course, getting up early enough in the morning that the test pattern is on.
Oh, yeah. And people don't get that. There's a whole generation that have no idea that there was an end of the day and the beginning of television, right?
Yeah. Yes. The weird end of the day feeling where it just sort of feels like there's a little bit of ceremony to it, but it also feels like this is what the end of the world is going to feel like in some subliminal way. But then getting up in the morning and seeing that test pattern, which was a Native American head.
Yeah.
Kind of in a bullseye, as I remember, which is kind of disturbing when you think about it, and then a tone that would play with it. And we would just patiently sit there and watch that until, the morning.
5 o'clock.
Yeah. And I would watch a show called Fury with Peter Graves. The Fury was the name of a horse, black and white thing, and The Lone Ranger. The old Clayton Moore, Jay Silver Lone Ranger. And then I would watch all the stuff that you're talking about that came a little bit later. I mean, these would be the morning reruns, and then there were the afternoon reruns of the garbage of Gilligan's Island.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I could probably answer any question about that horrible show that you could ask.
Well, Gilligan's Island. So I've once in a while in the summertime, I have my kids. I'm like, okay, we're going to watch something from the 60s or 70s. I don't want you watching this Nickelodeon, Disney Channel. It's terrible, terrible. Even the sitcoms are awful.
Yeah.
So we'll put on Genie. Funny, Bewitched, funny, Dick Van Dyke, always funny, Gilligan's Island and the Monkees, horrible shows.
Yeah, really, really bad.
Yeah, really bad. Yeah.
The Brady Bunch is a terrible show, objectively, but somehow it's got legs.
It does.
Somehow kids can watch the Brady Bunch now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a resurrection of the Partridge Family
in that sense. No,
I think the Partridge Family was trying too hard to be groovy, to kind of be of the time.
That's true. And the music dates it a bit, obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Shows turning 50 this year that premiered in 1969. You were 8, I was 2. The Brady Bunch, 50. The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Oh, I love that. Brandon Cruz. The Brandon Cruz. Bill Bixby.
Bill Bixby. Yeah. And Mrs.
Mrs. Livingston.
Mrs. Livingston. Absolutely. Oh, very good. Very good. Scooby-Doo. H.R. Puff and Stuff. There was my... See, that's a weird reference. Go. I know. The Glenn Campbell Good Time Hour.
Yeah. Glenn Campbell. Monster guitar player, Glenn Campbell.
The Jim Neighbors Hour.
I remember it.
A full hour.
That was, I feel like that was a summer replacement.
It might have been
thing.
For like Carol Burnett or something like that. Hee-Haw.
Hee-Haw.
The Johnny Cash show, which I've never seen. I would love to watch that show.
They should archive that
right?
in a useful way. Mm-hmm. Wait, what was the one you said before that? Oh, Hee-Haw.
Hee-Haw.
Hee-Haw. I have inexplicably logged hundreds of hours watching Hee-Haw.
Channel 9 here in Chicago.
There isn't much about it that is targeted at me. But I remember Roy Clark. I think subliminally Roy Clark subconsciously became kind of an uncle of mine. There was something I liked about his disposition. Another great guitar player.
Yeah, that's true.
It's funny you mentioned him with Glenn Campbell. If you look up, there's a rendition of Roy Clark and Glenn Campbell doing Ghost Riders in the Sky.
Really?
Sends chills down my spine. Those two guys. They were mostly known for their television presence, and in Glenn Campbell's case, a few hit songs, but they were both virtuoso guitar players.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Both gone recently.
Yeah.
Both gone, unfortunately. Love American Style.
Mm.
Both Marcus Welby and Medical Center. I don't remember those so much.
Okay. Medical Center, was that Chad Everett?
It was Chad Everett.
Okay. And Marcus Welby was Robert Young and James Brolin, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was James Brolin.
Wow.
Yeah. And Playboy After Dark.
Yeah.
If you ever watch any of those on YouTube.
I feel like I've watched Playboy After Dark more recently in some YouTube kind of thing. Yeah.
Number one show in 69, and we're talking to George Schlatter after this, is Laughing. That was the number one show in 69. Then there was the Gunsmokes, Family Affair, Here's Lucy.
Family Affair I remember well. I remember I had kind of a crush on the girl that played Sissy, the older sister.
Yeah, she's still around.
She is still around.
Once in a while,
and I did. I remembered her as this tall, lanky redhead. I got to do a radio show, Twilight Zone.
With
Carl. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to do a Twilight Zone with her and met her, and she was about a foot shorter than me.
Right.
And really a cute lady.
Blondish hair.
Blonde hair. Like really hard to put those two images together in my head.
Yeah,
but Laughing is one of those shows where if you were familiar with it, if it was part of the sort of background of your life during that time, somebody says Laughing and you immediately picture the psychedelic set.
Yeah.
I mean, I go straight to that. And then there's the
characters.
Yeah, and the tableau of Artie Johnson and Ruth Buzzy on the park bench.
That's right.
Yes,
exactly.
You know what it
was? Lily Tomlin on the big chair, Goldie Hawn being silly and
stupid.
It
was sort of a hipster Hee-Haw is what it was.
Yeah.
Because it was a lot of returning to the same tropes. They had their, these are our set pieces. We're going to watch the... Lily Tomlin sit in the operator chair. We're going to watch Lily sit in the oversized rocking chair. Artie and Ruth Buzzy, she's going to hit him in the head with a purse a few times.
It was almost too cool for TV and a little psychedelic, kind of like H&R Puff and Stuff.
Right.
It was like you had to smoke something to really, truly enjoy both these shows.
I think there was an undercurrent in H&R Puff and Stuff that really bothered me as a kid, although I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But something about that psychedelic, chaotic mayhem that was always going on that
Witchy
show.
Witchy Poo.
Lidsville, which was a sort of cousin
Sid
to
Marty
that
Croft.
Show, pushed that even further. Pushed
they
it
did.
To where I just couldn't be with it anymore.
Was that which one had the other guy from Family Affair? Was it Sigmund and the Sea Monsters? Didn't have Johnny Whitaker in there.
That was Sigmund and the Sea Monsters. Sigmund was the Sea Monster, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sigmund,
I think so.
Sigmund the Sea Monster.
Sigmund, yes, I think so.
That show made no sense at all. They had a sea monster living in their treehouse or something.
Your wife's over there just rolling her eyes. Like, these guys are old and ridiculous.
Well, it really speaks more of what kind of ideas were greenlit back then.
Yeah, right.
Which is pretty telling.
It was, yeah. And you think about that, too, because now everything, it almost seems like everything's greenlit because there's just so much content everywhere.
Yeah, keep churning it out.
But even though there were some really unusual shows back in the 60s and 70s, there were still just a handful of them.
Right.
I mean, you made it or you didn't make it. I mean, that was it, man.
Yeah, and I remember looking up, I think it was Gilligan's Island, But I thought, how long was that show actually on? And it was only a few seasons.
3 years, yeah.
Yeah, but there were like 30-something episodes in the first season.
Yeah, all those shows.
That almost makes it feel like they had to shoot almost year-round.
Yeah, yeah, there was like 100 episodes by the time you were done with 3 years on a sitcom.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty crazy. Always good talking to you, pal.
Likewise, thanks
Appreciate
very much.
You coming down. And now, very cool, two, count them, two episodes left of the seventh season of Chicago Fire. And, of course, that's Wednesday nights at 8 Central. Everything's been renewed?
Everything has been renewed. Yeah. And this our finale is going to end. I'm just going to go ahead and say this. I don't think it's a spoiler, but can you imagine a fire at a mattress factory? There's just
that's
a
gotta be
lot
something.
To burn
yeah.
in a mattress factory.
Yeah, absolutely, like a lumber yard. Absolutely.
So
yeah,
yeah it's gonna be a very powerful episode. It's gonna be pretty chilling, I think, at the end there. And you know, futures are uncertain the way they yep. like it. At
of
the
course,
end.
Of course, that's a good cliffhanger. Have a great summer, pal.
Thanks, brother. You too.
All right, it's 720 WGN.